A person must use cold rationality with regard to his plan for perfection, just like he uses it in every other area. He shouldn't feel this area is different. That's why Al-Tamakusha'efnashah. The person feels this area is different, I'll rely somehow on some type of miraculous force that's going to save me, you know? It won't be that I'll leave the world without learning. That's impossible. No. You can leave the world without learning if that's your plan. It'll happen. Just like any other area. You have to apply rationality to your plan and don't expect anything outside of the level of chokhmah. Which means, basically, that a person's outlook must be in every area. He must use his chokhmah in every area. He has to use chokhmah in every area. Just like he uses it in business, he has to use it over here. If he doesn't apply rationality over here, then it'll simply, what'll happen is he'll leave the world and won't be any chokhmah. Won't have any terror. Okay. Next one. Hey. Hu ha-yalmer. Okay, ein bur yirechet. A bur... What? Yeah, bur is the same meaning, English and Hebrew. It means a bur is not a yirechet. A yirechet, one who fears sin. V'lo amor et chosid. And an ignoramus cannot be considered a chosid, whatever chosid means. Okay? All right, let's see. Let's take the Rambam. The Rambam says, "Bur hu she'ein lo lo chokhmah v'lo midos." He's a person that doesn't have any knowledge and doesn't have any ethical perfection as well. V'am ha'aretz hu she'ein lo milo sichlios. Means he doesn't have any intellectual perfections. Aval yiyu lo k'tzas milo samidos. But he has some of the perfection of ethical perfection. He has some, partakes somewhat of ethical perfection. Okay. So what is the chiddush of the memor? What is the memor telling us? That a person who's a boor cannot be a person that fears sin? I mean, what is the chiddush? Well, of course, if he's a total idiot, what's the chiddush? Lo amor et chosid, I understand. Because people think that a person who can be on a very high level, that's the average mentality. Most people, most religions really believe that. That a person can be a simpleton, he has good emotions, emotionally he's very religious, he prays to God and he tries his best. Most people, as a matter of fact, identify that with tzidkus. That's what they think tzidkus is. Tzidkus is really, to them, a certain emotional attitude. Frumkeit, religiosity. And they're homo religiosus, right. And they think that all the religions of the world, with the exception of Yadus, really identify religiosity in that type of emotional attitude. Yadus is the only one that says no. If you're an ignoramus, it's not. So that's why the other religions have so many more adherents than we do. Because most of the world do not have the intellectual perfection, so the numbers go over there, because it's very satisfying to them. Very happy to think that everybody could be a great tzaddik, even though he's ignorant, because knowledge is something which is not easily attainable. And people are very comfortable with that idea, that without knowledge you could be the greatest tzaddik. What was the appeal of the early Hasidus? That was the whole appeal. That you think that you have to be a great Talmud Chacham to be a tzaddik is not true. You could be an ignorant fisherman, Schuster, and you could be the greatest. Your neshama could be on the highest level. And that's the appeal, right? The Mishnah says no. Lo amar et chassid. Okay, that I understand. Fine, you have to tell it. But what is ein bur yirechet? I'll tell you what I think the Rambam means is like this. I think the Rambam means that a ein bur yirechet. See, yirechet, what does yirechet mean? A person that fears sin. A person that fears, in order to fear sin, what he means by fearing, what does he mean by fearing sin? Everybody fears sin. I mean, any rational person fears sin. What he means is like this. Fearing sin means a person has a certain attitude towards chet. He has a certain attitude towards it. It's not a slipshod attitude where one day he feels this is a serious violation, next day this is nothing. A yirechet means he has to have a certain, in his mind, there has to be a certain area where he identifies Chayit and he has a certain feeling towards it. Now, why can't a boor have that feeling? Not because the boor lacks Chachma. Because the Yamaretz also doesn't have any Chachma. The only difference, a boor doesn't necessarily mean he's stupid, by the way. A boor can be very intelligent. What it means is he doesn't have perfection of the Midos. So what the Mishnah is telling us is this. What is perfection of the Midos really? Perfection of the Midos means a person, in simple terms, self-control. He has control over himself. That's perfection of the Midos. He's able to control his emotions. What I'm saying is, the Rambam, of course, says perfection of Midos means the middle road. The middle road. Yeah, fine. That's all very nice with regard to what the perfection is. But why can't he be Yirei Chet? Is because since his nature is such that he doesn't have the ability to exercise any control over his emotions, because he has radical emotions. One day he's torn over here, the next day he's torn over there. He doesn't have to, the middle of the road exemplifies a certain type of moderation and a control over the emotions. It is a certain perfection. We spoke about it many times, a certain psychological perfection. That what people talk about today is compulsions, compulsive nature. Is a compulsive nature is not a that's what is meant by a boor, by the way. The boor doesn't mean the English word boor, actually. Boor over here means he's a person who is overcome by compulsions. They don't have there's no moderation. They don't have their nature is not one that lends itself to a type of life in which things are emotionally in place. Simply, they get along with people, they can do things. There's a certain type of state of mind that they don't achieve. So what Chazal say is such a person cannot be Yirei Chet. Why can't they be Yirei Chet? Very simple reason. Because since their emotions are not of a nature, are not moderated, so it means that one day they're overcome by one compulsion, the next day by another. There can't be any consistency in their lives. If there's no consistency, you can't be Yirei Chet. It's impossible. It's impossible. The compulsion will overpower the fear of chayt. Everybody wants to be Yirei Chet. That's just normal. Normal person wants to be Yirei Chet. But in a nature which is not perfected, which is distorted psychologically, Yiras Chet cannot exist. Can't exist. Why? For a very simple reason. Because a person who is overcome, who is compulsive by nature, overcome by certain passions, he will not be able to tolerate the idea that he is a chote. Now, this is just a wave of passion, and really it's all wrong. And he can't. The person can't. He can't do that. So he has to, in his mind, justify himself. And in order to justify himself, what has to happen is that the chait, the sense of chait, has to be lost. Has to be lost. So if you see a person that is an individual that's overcome by powerful waves of passion in different directions, you should know he cannot be Yirei Chet. This person cannot be. It's impossible for him to be Yirei Chet. It is impossible, yeah, it's impossible, unless he'd be in total depression. There's no way for him to work out such a situation. Whereas a person who has moderation of the emotions, they can have a corner of their mind, which is Chet, they recognize it, and they have a certain consistency. They have a certain consistent method of dealing with it, and they can establish such a thing as Yiras Chet. But not a person who is a wild individual. A person who's just overcome by wild emotions. Can't be Yirei Chet, because the concept of Chet, they can't have such a concept, they can't tolerate such a concept. Because they're going to have to violate it again and again, because of their wild passions. So they have to eventually just obliterate the idea of Chet. See, or push it back to a very distant corner of their minds where it has really no effect on their lives. So such a person, you should know, cannot really be essentially a Yirei Chet. That's what the Mishnah says. That's what I think the Mishnah is according to the Rama. Okay. A person who accepts it on an authoritative authoritative sources that this is a bad thing to do, may not understand really theoretically why it's bad, but he avoids it. He has a consistent way of living, and he avoids chait. That's a level, that's yiras chait. That's a tremendous tremendous madrega. Might not be the madrega of a Talmud Chacham, it's a level. It's a level. That is the level of an Amoritz. That's the level of an Amoritz. It's even referring to plain yiras onesh. A person's afraid they're going to go, God's going to hurt them. All right, it's a low level. The Rambam says it's not really the way a person should worship God, but it's a level. It's something. Some of the sheets and Musa, they used to employ yiras onesh. They used to use yiras onesh. They go down to the basement and they turn down the lights and they would hang a something from the ceiling. A herring, I don't know, whatever. But I don't know, I'm not too familiar with the methods. But they used to scare Murish Chayra, they used to call it. They used to frighten the people who were there. You know, the Talmidim of it, they used to frighten them. You know, Gehenim and, you know, fire and brimstone. Yeah. That was a big sheet of mussar. So they said, could you do that? That it says, the Rambam says that this is a very low level, and it's only for the Amei Aretz. He used to say, yeah, halavai, we should be like the Amalek Amaratzim. We should be like these people. Halavai, we should be there. We're on that level. I'm not saying I subscribe to that view, but I'm just saying, you know, this is a level. It's a level. What is a chassid? Lo Amaratz chassid. So what is a chassid? But a person who is a Talmud Chacham, he could be a chassid. Talmud Chacham could be a chassid. What is a chassid? A chassid is a different level already. A chassid is a level where the Amoritz is a person that works out of emotions. That's the Amoritz. But he has good emotions. He lives in moderation. He doesn't have compulsions. He's not crazy passions. That's not Amoritz. He lives a certain life, certain type of lifestyle. But a person who is a chassid, that's a different thing altogether. Different realm altogether. That's where the intellect is the guide. The chassid could do different things. Chassid is a different... it means that he simply... well, his perfection is a rational perfection. Rational perfection means he could do things against his emotions or with his emotions, whatever it might be. I mean, he's completely... he works from mind. That's a different kind of perfection. So Lomar's chassid means he can never be a chassid. That's a different level. Can't reach that level. Like Rabbeinu Yonah says, he says about the Amoritz, V'yachaliyah tzaddik, he says, V'lasos l'kayim b'masha omar loshin etstava, and what they tell him to keep, he can keep. He can be mekayim it. Achal ma'ilas achasidus lo yuchal lahasikim gadol b'tara. He says, but chasidus, only a person who's great in Torah. Shehim midos etzricha taras halev, v'zakus hanefesh. An interesting thing. He says taras halev, v'zakus hanefesh. What is the tyrus lev? What is a zakas anefesh? Zakas anefesh means a certain fineness of the soul. It means a certain type of perfection that is only to be related with chachma. But tyrus alev means also. Tyrus alev means that he's a chacham. He's misbonin. He studies himself. That's the tyrus alev. Tyrus alev means he studies himself. He studies himself, and he studies the world. And he functions on a very sophisticated, very fine type of zakus means it's very fine. It's like high-minded type of method. Pure, yeah, zakus. That's right, pure. So that's only possible with chachma. Chachma is a refiner, is a refining process. Chachma refines the individual and gives a person different ideas of the world, of life. And he could do mitzvahs on a different, a qualitatively different level. That's the chachma. He says the Amoritz, however, doesn't have the chachma to take him away from the regular, to do lefnim mishur asadin. What does it mean lefnim mishur asadin? What does it mean by lefnim mishur asadin? What lefnim mishur asadin means more than the din. What does it mean? It means the Amoritz has good emotions. He's not going to cheat anybody. He's not going to let anybody cheat him. He would be a fool if he did. He's a regular. He has his regular approach that he does. He's a fair businessman. He does things properly. That's the Amoritz. But a chassid is different. Chassid is a person who could allow somebody sometimes to cheat him and to feel that he really outdid him, and to walk away and to laugh at him, and he could let him get away with it. Not because, I'm not saying as a general rule, but I'm saying in certain situations, that emotion won't bother him. So it depends. We'll see where the situation is, what the proper thing to do is in a certain situation. And things will not bother him. Somebody could be maligolo, they could embarrass him, or they could laugh at him, or they could ridicule him, or he could lose his covet, or whatever. Doesn't affect him. He just has one thing in mind. What is the proper thing to do in that situation? If in that situation that's the proper thing to do, then he can do it. That an Amoritz can't do. That's what he means by lefnim mishuras nim. An Amoritz can't do it because an Amoritz would be wrong for an Amoritz. If he did that, he would be crazy. He would not be, there's no way emotionally, there's no emotional attitude that would be proper that would justify such an action. You see, a chacham is the one that could do that because depending on assessing a situation, he has control over his emotions. He could do things which are lefnim mishuras din. That's what he means by lefnim mishuras din. It means he could do things which would go against the grain, the emotional grain of an individual. Whereas the Amoritz, it would be impossible for him to do that, because if he did that, that would mean he's not healthy, he's not a good Amoritz. An Amoritz means he's healthy psychologically, which means that a fair-minded person, he does things in a fair way, but he has his regular standard approach that he always operates by. At times, he's predictable. The Amoritz is predictable. Talmud Chacham, the Chassid, is not predictable. Never know what he's going to do. It works totally by Chacham. See? Can't predict. Emotions, you can predict. You know his emotions. That's it. Chacham, you can't predict. That's a different level. Okay, that's what he means by lefnim mishuras hadin. He says valzen nikra amoritz, and that's why the person is called amoritz from neishu imoyim b'derech eretz. He's derech eretz means this is the way he has a good way of life. Ulefisha rov b'nei olam kamoso. Most of the people belong to the group of amei eretz. Most of the people are amei eretz, and that's why they call the people of the land, because those are the most of the people. Okay. That's the way the Rambam learns. But Rashi has a different shot. It's out of the realm of Maisa Chassidus is out of the realm of the Amoritz. He has no knowledge of himself, he has no knowledge of his emotions, he has no knowledge of what Tikkun HaOlam is supposed to be like, what should be done, what not be done. Bur. Now Rashi says this. Bur means reik mikol dover kemo soda bur. V'adama lo seisham is lo sivar. It means desolate, empty, barren. The garua hu me amoritz, and this is worse than amoritz. Why is it worse than amoritz? Rashi says, interesting. Shafilu betiv masa omatan eini yadeya. The man doesn't even know business. That's the difference between the boor and the amoritz, according to Rashi. The boor is not a businessman. The amoritz knows business. And Rashi goes on. He says, v'lo amoritz chassid, and amoritz cannot be on the level of a chassid. Middle level, he could be. Aval yirei chayt efshar. But he could fear sin. Why could he fear sin? Dahavi mito efshar. I'm sorry, yirei chayt efshar dahavi. Mitoch shehu misasek bischora. Since the man is involved in business. That's why he could be yirei chayt. Boy, it would be nice if all the people involved in business were yirei chayt. Most of them are the biggest crooks. So what's the... What's the shot? Business is a mile over here. Business is considered a good thing. And Amoritz is a person that he could be Rechay. Shouldn't say most of them. I mean, you can condemn most of the people. But I mean, it would be nice if business and Rechay went together. Yeah. What you want to say is that the man in business means he has aspirations. He has he's looking for different possibilities to occur. So therefore, he's a yirechei. He's afraid he's going to lose his business. You mean it's like the Gemara said about the sailors? That's what he's saying. Sailors are fear of God because they're always in danger. But the only thing is, Rashi says, "Shafilu betiv mata omason eino yodea." He doesn't say. He should have said, "Eino osat b'masa omata." He's not involved in masa omata. And although, when it comes to Amoritz, Rashi does say, "V'lo Amoritz aval yirechei efshe dahavi." Mitoch shum is asek b'schara. It's interesting. There's two. He has two lashonos. Says mitoch shum is asek b'schara. It would seem that the yirei chet, he is a yirei chet because he's involved in business, the very involvement in business. But the boor is betiv masa matan eini yadeya. He doesn't know masa matan. It's funny. One place he says he doesn't know. One place he says because he's involved. Yeah. He's right. In other words, according to Rashi, Rashi would mean a laborer. A laborer is a boor. Boor is the lowest class. It means a laborer. He works for somebody, has a job, and that's it. The interesting thing is they have this class distinction. Right, that's right. But no, he could be a businessman. But the, in other words, a boor is a person that's a worker. He's a worker. You give him a job, and you pay him for his hours, and has no creativity, comes in, gets his job. He's a typical unionized man. That's a boor. See, that's a boor. It's not an Amaretz. Amaretz is your day of Ativ Masaman. He's a businessman. Wheels, he deals, he maneuvers. That's a level. You see? That's the way Rashi learns, really. That's how Rashi learns. So why can't a boor be a Yerechet? Why can't a boor be a Yerechet? The answer is, I would say, I'd say the same thing, thank you. That Levy thing. That what it means is that a person who is a boor, it means that he is on a low, he's on an infantile level. It means he has never reached the level of maturity where he can go out into the world, he can change things, he can do business transactions. He could be involved. Now, you're day of a Tiv Masamat, and he knows how to maneuver. Not afraid of anybody. He maneuvers. He invests his money. He buys. He sells. He's active. He's involved with the world. He's not afraid of the world. He's a mature individual. See? A boor is a person who just takes a menial job, and he waits for his pay. That person, according to Rashi, if we're interpreting Rashi right, that person cannot really be a Yirei Chet. He may be afraid of something. But that's not really a Yerechet. He's not on a rational... His reality principle is not developed enough. He's basically a person who is inhibited and whose life really caters to a childhood type of fantasy of support. And that's it. He looks for a little job. He gets a support. Like an Evid. An Evid. He's any debative Masa Matan. He's an Evid. It means he has a little job and he's supported. And that's it. You cannot consider that Yirei Chet. So Yirei Chet means where a person has a certain realistic attitude. This is a person who's Yiras Chet. He could have a Yiras Onesh, but it's on an infantile level. Yirei Chet means he has to see that in reality something's harmful. He sees Maso Matan. There are good actions, there are bad actions. There are wise investments, there are foolish investments. He's a day of Bativ Masa Matan. He sees from the practical life. You see, Masa Matan is the area where a person gets his first level of reality. If he's good, then what does the instinct say? The instinct requires that we support ourselves. How are you gonna live? You have to support yourself. So the instinct is converted into doing activities which reap a benefit that you could live. But you have to plan. It's not going to happen by itself. You have to plan. You have to be intelligent. You have to plan. You have to know how to maneuver. And if you do it intelligently, then you'll be successful. So a person who has learned that lesson in life, a person is on that level where his instincts have been converted to aligned with a certain type of reality, he knows that you have to do things like a chacham. Of course, I mean, a person can be in business and not be successful. Could have a bad luck, but basically, on the whole, everybody has luck that they could make use of. Things happen. I mean, during a person's lifetime, if he's intelligent, so then it'll work out. Usually, I mean, it's all the time. Usually, it'll work out. I mean, a lot of laws of averages are such that a person who's intelligent in business will be more successful than the person isn't. I think one time in Russia, they took all the money and they spread it out evenly. They found that after a few years, it was an experiment like that, it was done once. Yeah, after a few years, the people who had the money originally wound up with the money again. Same thing. See why? What's the show? Because there's a certain approach to reality. It's not just haphazard. People who say, "Oh, he just had good luck." Those are the people that are really, the people who are dreamers and not in reality, and they always they don't want to feel that because they weren't successful. So they have an excuse, so therefore they say it wasn't their fault. Well, he was lucky, a lucky break. Sure, lucky break. But the thing, he was there, when the break was there, he was ready to act on the break. Because he worked rationally. So it means the first stage in human development is to take the instinct, the instinctual, which is a desire for a person to survive, and to translate it in some type of rational activity where he recognizes the world of reality. And that is done in Maso Matan. That's Maso Matan. That's Maso Matan. That's the first natural step for man. So rather than looking down at the at business as being bad, I mean, it's on the contrary, it's the first rational step. It's the first rational step. If a person can't make that step, that shows you this. He has tremendous inhibitions. He's inhibited tremendously. And we can't consider this person's fear of chait a real fear. It's a superstition. It's an emotional type of thing. But it's not a rational fear of chait. Because the area in his mind has not been demarcated. The concept of something really rationally being harmful. He has superstitions. He has feelings. This is not good. I better keep away from this. I better put on my phone today. Something bad is going to happen to me. But he doesn't have a rational concept of reality, that there is something that could be harmful. So harmful, that something being harmful to the soul, he can't conceive of, because he doesn't even conceive with regard to his body as something being, things working according to the laws of Chachma. But rather, everything somehow or other is works with a superstitious or some type of fantasy type of idea. He can't incorporate a rational plan and go out and do something. That type of person, according to Rashi, is not a Yirechet. Yirechet means you have to have a certain level of reality. That's the way Rashi learns. I'm not saying that a person, in order to be Yirechet, has to be a businessman. No one's understanding. I'm saying the Chazal, the Rashi's explaining it in a universal way. A person could be a great Talmud Chacham and never have done any business in his... In his life, yeah, Tanoim, that's right, Tanoim. Sometimes I want business, sometimes we're laborers. That has nothing to do with there you're talking about a different reason. It's a different thing. The reason why they want to be a laborer because they want to be involved with mentally with the problems of business. It doesn't mean a person has to be a businessman. It's talking in a normal, the average way. You're talking about the society at large. You're not talking about individuals. We're not saying a rule that in order to be a reche, you have to be a businessman. We're saying naturally, what is business? Business is the first attempt of the rational part of man to convert his instinct into some type of approach to reality. That's what it is. That's what business is. But a person who doesn't do it, a person who is afraid to do that, who has inhibitions, cannot really reach the level of reality. That's what we're saying. All right? Yadani said that it's interesting. The first thing that... It's very good shot. The Gemara says the first thing they ask a person after he dies is Nasata... Nasasava Nasata Bamuna, which means that you do business properly. Why is that the first thing they ask him? Because that's the first translation of the instincts into the area of reality, rationality. See, that's the first step. It's very good. That's why they ask him that first. Let's get down to the first step. Let's see how you are in the first step. First step. But that's right. That's what business is. That's what business is. That's why, because it's the most because it's the most basic step. It's close to the instinctual. If you're honest over there, then you have it down properly. So, you know, that's the area. That's why they ask for that. That's true. Also, a person in business. That's true. Also, a person in business has to give and take. That's what we said around give and take. Matter of fact, somebody came to me with a tiny. They said that they hate Rosh Yeshiva. I'm happy to hear that. He said, why do they hate Rosh Yeshiva? He said, I'll tell you why. Because it was a businessman. The man was a very successful businessman. He says, you know why? He says, because I'm a businessman, he says, and I have to give in. Because a businessman has to give in. Somebody comes, a client, and they argue with a haggle over the price. If I would just be despotic about it, I'd lose my business. So you know, I have to give in. Reality dictates, I have to give in. But a Rosh Yeshiva, he can do anything he wants. He's a total despot. He's a dictator, he says. That's why he dislikes it. That's right. That's what he's trying. He's in the process. He's trying to do it. But the thing is, that is true, though. It is true about the... I don't know. I don't think it's true about a review, but it's true about the... Not true. But the thing is, it is true about a businessman. Businessman has to have a certain amount of give and take. It's true. So that definitely, it means he operates and he has to control himself. He has to do certain emotions he has to have under control. So definitely, he reaches a certain level of bringing the instinctual to conform with reality. It's a level. He is right if the Rosh Yeshiva is just using the situation as a tool to act out his emotions. That's true. He's right about that. He's right. A person like that who simply uses a situation, I mean, to act out his emotions, to gain power or honor. I mean, there are cases like that. That he's right. That person is not on the level of a businessman, and it's possible for a person to be that way. But just because a person is a Rosh Yeshiva doesn't make it impossible for him to be operating with wrong motives. I mean, there's no words that says that you can't teach Torah if a guy has impure motives. Possible. But if a person is not interested, he has to deal with politics. There's a political side. That is true. There is a political side, but his position vis-a-vis certain people permits him a tremendous leeway. Gives him tremendous leeway, because since he's the authority on religion, and anything in that area, he's the supposed authority. So therefore, he has a lot of leeway. But of course, the true ideal of a Rosh Yeshiva is not one that's trying to utilize the situation to satisfy his emotion. He's an investigator. He's trying to understand what the reality of things are, and people are asking him what it is. He has no personal emotional gain from the situation. Then, of course, what he's saying is absolutely false. It depends what, you know, what a businessman is. The business reason why he said it is because he doesn't perceive, you're right, he doesn't perceive such a, that's right, he doesn't perceive such a dimension. There could be a person that's just interested in understanding what the reality is. He doesn't perceive that. So that's why he had this notion. But anyway, the complaint was a good one. I mean, a person who is a Baishin cannot learn. So Rashi elaborates a little bit. Lefisha nemar im navalta bisnase v'im zamosa yad leper. It's a hard pasuk in Mishlei. It's hard to understand what it is. Even the Ibn Ezra, who usually goes for a literal interpretation, has about three pshatim over there. V'zeh pasuk pirshu chazal b'mesechet brachos. Im menavel atzmo b'divrei Torah, if a person makes himself navala. Navala means disgusting. In Divrei Torah, he says, Sofo lesnase, the end is that he'll be raised up. Avalimu shosek, if he's quiet, she'ena shoel balachos, he doesn't ask halachos, or bishorin yonim, or in other things, yasim yado lefiv. He'll put his hand to his mouth. Kloma lo yeda kum. Someone asks something, he'll go,
like a novel?
Huh?
Like
novel. Yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Makes him look real bad.
What does it mean, really? What does it mean? Makes him look real bad.
Makes him look real stupid.
What is the concept, law of Baishan, law made? A simple idea that a person is a Baishan, you can't ask it. What does it mean? It means like, and why does it say, in the Valta Atzmachov, if you degraded yourself in the Divrei Torah, why degraded yourself? Why? Because the answer is like this. The answer is that which a person holds most high is intellect. That is always respected above everything else. No matter what the values of a society is, the chacham is always respected. A genius, a great mind, people have tremendous respect for. And even the business world, I mean, if a person can pride himself, he's making tremendous amounts of money. But you'll see that a person who made it in business will always be proud that he made it in business, and a person, he will look down at a person who won the lottery. See? It's not chachma. He didn't do anything. He didn't accomplish anything. And even the greatest businessmen who consider themselves so intelligent they earn money, they support their philanthropists, they support the institutions, the colleges, and they want to have their names associated with intellectuality, because they recognize down deep, man recognizes, gives a tremendous value to chachma. A library in a university with the names of... what wouldn't a businessman do to become immortalized and by being associated with those great minds of the past that have left their name in history? What?
They might give up all their wealth for that being something. They really envy them.
They envy the chacham. You see, they're not that rational in terms of making a business deal like that, but they definitely would like to have it. Definitely respect it. I'll show you. I'll bring you the best writer that would not know what a chacham is. Because all these great minds never had any businessmen really supporting them. Where were the businessmen in their generations? Where were the great businessmen? What's the answer? The answer is because they didn't recognize chacham. They recognized the guys from the previous generation. Because the emotional, see, any person that makes a breakthrough cannot, you'll find pioneers usually get nothing. Usually get little or nothing. And that goes for physical pioneers as well as intellectual pioneers. What did Daniel Boone get out of America? Nothing.
Coonskin.
That's it. See? The truth of the matter is the pioneers are the ones that make the breakfast, but they get very little themselves. But a pioneer in thought, especially, gets very little. Why? I'll tell you why. Because what he does is, you see, people have a strong emotional tie to their... A person has to be... In this respect, Schopenhauer was right when he said that a person has to be a metaphysician. A person is a metaphysician. He has to be. He has to have a value system. And people aren't just metaphysicians because they want to be rational. They have to. They must live by certain ideals. Man has no way. Even the mafia have ideals. Everybody has ideals. A man must live with ideals. Part of his nature. So what happens is like this.
No matter how warped,
there's always an ideal. Now, people cherish the ideals that they're raised with. They cherish them. Along comes a great thinker. And what is a thinker? Thinker is a man who could stand on his own 2 feet, cares nothing about what everybody has taught him until now. And he sets out a whole new scheme. A whole new Weltanschauung, a new scheme. Nobody likes this. Not too happy about this. Because he's telling them their cherished ideas are worthless. So therefore, during that period, no one can recognize this chacham. I mean, I wouldn't say no one. They usually have a few people that a handful of people. But because there's some people that they recognize chacham. But I'm talking about the world. The world at large can't. Next generation, what happens? The next generation, these ideas of the past chacham become a part. The whole, the accepted way. See, he left his mark, and now what he said becomes incorporated into the accepted. Now he's on the bookshelf. You see? So therefore, the chacham, the society is always one step too late for the chacham. One step too late. After he dies, he's gone. He left the next generation, which was raised with the previous generation's values and the attacks of the attacks and the corrections of the Chacham. They will create a new thing. He will be raised to a different level, and that's it. I think it could very well be that's what the pasuk means by the door, the difference in the door midbar. Why they couldn't really make it. You see, they couldn't make it. Pasha Shlach, the Meraglim, they were weak. They couldn't make it. They couldn't make it because they were a door that everything was... The copper was pulled out from under their feet. They simply... It was too astronomical. They were raised in one society, one value system. Now Moshe Rabbeinu comes along and teaches them a totally new system. But the ground is shaky. They really weren't raised. They weren't raised in these ideas. So they have to drop all their cherished ideas of the past and now assume new ideas. It was unbelievable. Chazal say that they were Dordea. And it's right. Because if they weren't Dordea, they could never make it. Impossible. They couldn't do it. But even though they were able to do it, but they couldn't fully... the security wasn't there. But what did Moshe Rabbeinu say? He says, but B'neichem, he says... They're the ones that are going to conquer Eretz Yisrael. They're the ones that will build up Klal Yisrael. Why? Because they were raised. For them, it wasn't a new thing. They were raised in the situation of the... that was the next generation. They had a solid emotional grounding. And that's why they were able to do it. But a generation that was uprooted from its Ryan can't. It's a society. People aren't constructed that way. That's why the Chacham really never has a Chacham who makes tremendous breakthrough will never have the masses of people. See? That's why it has to be that way. It has to be the way. A generation later, yeah, but not during his life. Not during his generation. See? That's why society always feels bad. Society always said, what wouldn't people in society today give to see one of the... A Descartes? What wouldn't they give to see a brother? They'd give millions of dollars in one appearance. During his lifetime, the man had to work out a way to survive. Why? Matter of fact, he gave his life because he got up every morning. The queen, he had to get up every morning and teach the queen mathematics. So he died because it was too weak. He died at the age of 53. But so the thing is that that's the way it is. That's the way society is. It's a rule. It cannot be changed. That's the way it is. So it's true. So the businessman, you see, the society at large does respect the Chacham. it's a strange thing, though. See, they respect the Chacham for what the Chacham is not, actually. It's an interesting thing. They respect the Chacham because the Chacham has attained a certain type of immortality, a certain type of covet. But the truth of the matter is, the Chacham himself really was never concerned for that. As a matter of fact, if that was his concern, he would not really be a Chacham, and he really would not be able to make any breakthroughs, because he'd be too concerned about what everybody thinks about him.
What other people say.
Yeah. So actually, it's a strange phenomenon. It's a phenomenon where the people who respect the individual, the Chacham, do not respect him for what he was, but for an accident of what he is. If they really, what he really is, they would never do. They'd never do it. Okay. Last thing. So therefore, we're getting back to Loa Baishin Lame. Why? Because at any rate, even people, humanity at large, have to respect Chacham.
Have to respect Chacham.
When a person asks a question, and there is a chance that the question is a foolish question, you see, everything is at stake. It's worse. It's worse than making a mistake in another area. Because since people respect, down deep they respect Chachma, and a person who says something stupid, something idiotic, he is jeopardizing his whole mahus, his whole essence. You see. That's why in this area, lo habayshin lomed, it's impossible. Because that's why it says, in navalta atzmachal divrei Torah. What does navalta mean? Navalta means that you became something that's a nevela. Disgusting. Why? Because you jeopardize the most important, the most valuable thing that a person prides himself with, and that is his chachma. You took a chance to ask a question, which if you look foolish and you look stupid, everybody's gonna look down at you. Why? What does it mean the vault that's more there? Why couldn't people be nice about it? Everybody has to be embarrassed. And if a Talmud asks a question, it's a stupid question, so the Rebbe has to embarrass him, and the mitzvah the Rebbe embarrass him. So why did he become this Navel? Why Nevala? The answer is, it doesn't mean a Rebbe that embarrasses him. I mean, nice Rebbe, good Rebbe. But it's a natural situation that a person that asks a question in the presence of others, you see, or even privately sometimes, if he says something, his Rebbe or other people look at him as stupid, so it's the greatest embarrassment, because it's dealing with intelligence, which is the most respected thing in the world, you see. So that's why Lo Abayshin Lomei means Baishonis is a very good meter. Chazal says it's a good meter. But who says it? I think somebody says it's a good meter, but in this area it's no good. Means about Shitova Bakolin and Levad Belimud. Limud, it's no good. King Shinema. What's possum? Adabra Beda Secha Negem Malachim Veloevash. What it means is that you cannot, again, you see, that in Yadus, you cannot really have any emotional attitude which is good. There's no such thing as an emotional attitude which is good. That's the essence of Yadus. That everyone else thinks they're looking for a certain attitude of perfection. There is no attitude. Baishanus, the greatest meter, wonderful meter. A person's shy. The Gemara says that's one of the meters of Umar of Klal Yisrael. But in learning, if you can't control it in learning, bad. Learning, it's impossible. It's an impossibility. Why does it say if you don't ask, you can't learn? Of course it means that the Chazal are going, they take the extreme case. It means a person that will never be able to ask, he won't be able to approach anybody to ask him a question. It doesn't necessarily mean that he has to ask in public all the time. Maybe he can go privately ask an older person, an older fellow, ask him what the pshat is. But whatever it is, he's jeopardizing, he's putting himself on the line. He has to put himself on the line. I don't care how he does it, he's got to put himself on the line. Because the question could be embarrassing, he could be embarrassed. But this is a stupid question for him. Otherwise, you ask me why must he? He must because Chazal say one thing. Chazal say, Ein adam omei bedivrei Torah elim kein nichshel b'hem t'chila. There is no way that the nichshel b'hem t'chila. There is no way that the human mind can reach perfection, any type of perfection in learning, without making mistakes. It's an impossibility. Impossible. It's just impossible. The mind works through trial and error. That's the way it advances. And therefore, you have to have the greatest chacham had to have asked a stupid question. It's impossible not. And therefore, the Chazal say, that's what it means. That's also part of the concept of law of Baishin Lame. Because since it's necessary to falter, you must falter before you can rise in Torah. So it's just impossible. Law of Baishin Lame, it's an impossibility. Yes. I mean, that definitely is true. He has to remove the ego from the situation. Otherwise he can't possibly think freely and ask freely, because he's going to be too concerned with his own disappointment. You're right about that. That's very good. He said it very good. Richard Rohr said it very good. He said that it shows you another thing. It shows you that you should not think that learning is just a passive process. Absolutely right. That learning cannot be a passive process, but it must be one of interaction. In order to really gain learning, there has to be interaction. And that's why, if he's a Baishin, it's an impossibility. Because then he'll be, what will happen is, the person will eventually just be in a situation where he'll be totally reserved, and he'll just be working in a passive way. It will not be interaction. That's no question about it. That's part of the memory. Law of Baishin Lomed. Law of Baishin Lomed, you're right. Law of Baishin Lomed shows you two things. It shows you that this area is the area where Baishanus really, you have the height of Baishanus, and also it's an area which necessitates having the Baishanus. That's the nature of the area. Can't learn passively. Right. He has a nice description of it, the Rabbeinu Yonah. He says, the gamein l'talmud lomar. The Talmud should not say tipesh kamoni, a fool like me. Eich eshal davar lefnei chacham gadol b'torah mafulpo b'chachma. How could I ask such a question? It's an interesting thing. Lo das v'lo tvuna li. I don't have any knowledge. Don't have any insight. V'im ko yeh mishpato kol hayomim chachma elav me'ayin tavo. See. All right. So what is he saying over there? He's adding a new dimension of Rabbeinu Yonah. He's saying there's two things. Okay, one thing is that the person shouldn't be afraid to say something. There's going to be ridicule. That's one thing. But there's another kind of bullshit. Another kind of bullshit is that a person is simply afraid to confront a gadol b'chachma. No time. It's not a time for propriety in Torah. It's not proper. Who am I to ask this great chacham? But he adds. You see what he says? He says, "Zeh shem chazal balei hamusar b'sefer mifcha pninim shal shailas hashotim ushmor shmiras hanadivim ratzalom akasha hanadivim lo yifazru mamonu v'lo yatzroso ach nos demosol mekam asaruim b'chefes v'ratzin kasha b'yanu l'mayla kena chachma yedaber bo im anoshim haruim u'be'es haroi." What is he saying? He is like this. And of course, it doesn't mean that a person should be an idiot also. Just walk over to Gadol b'Chachma all the time and just ask many stupid questions. Like, ask somebody else. See? Because it means that in the proper time, he has to know when is the proper time to ask this Gadol b'Chachma this question. And he shouldn't say to himself the distance is too far between the two personalities. That's another dimension of Baishanus. Baishanus is two things. Baishanus, first of all, is that you're afraid you're going to look ridiculous. Baishanus also expresses itself in a feeling, in a sense, of your own rank. In Torah, you can't have a sense of rank. In Torah, you have to be able to ask the greatest gadol b'chachma, and not indiscriminately, of course. That's what he says, not indiscriminately. But at certain times when you can, when it's the right time to do it, when you can gain from it, so you have to ask him. Even though you have really no shaychus to this gadol b'chachma, you're really on a low level, you have no shaychus to him, but there is a time when you should really approach him, and you should try to gain from him. That's what he says. The other thing is rank. So it expresses itself in two things. It expresses itself in the ability to take the abuse. That's one, and also in terms of that there shouldn't be any concept of rank in your mind. There's no such thing as rank. The smallest person has a right to ask the greatest government. And he's supposed to. It's knowledge, and he's supposed to do it.
But would you say
not indiscriminately, but certain times. There are times when he can do it. You know, certain Chazal didn't just ask indiscriminately every kind of question. There's certain times that, well, I ask like a roundabout way, like sometimes I would ask. Well, they'd notice, make certain observations. But you have to know, be a chacham to know when and where. You can't just ask, everybody's going to badger a gadol b'Torah. It's ridiculous. That's not a system. But you shouldn't feel that you can't ask him, so when the situation arises that you should, you have to jump in and do it. The game.
Yeah.
That's it. We're up to the law, Kabdon Malamed.
Mishnah?
The Mishnah is, it's in Avos, Perek Sheni, Mishnah Hay. Alright, so here we talk about the shortcomings of Malamed. What is a Kabdon, actually? What is a Kabdon? What is a Kabdon? Yeah, so you're saying that a perfectionist can't be a good teacher. You're saying, yeah, so it depends. If his perfectionism expresses itself in teaching, he'll be an excellent teacher. See? So you can't say it's a Kabdon, really. A Kabdon isn't really a perfectionist. Yeah, what is it? Actually, the Kabdon means intolerant. Exactly. Intolerant. Person is intolerant. Intolerant. Now, over a year, when speaking about a teacher, really, it's not the. Sometimes the Pirkei Avos discusses. It gets down to the root of a certain character trait, you see. But sometimes it doesn't get down to the root of the character trait, but it discusses a certain expression of human behavior which could have several causes. It's not getting down to the root. But in this mimer of a law, Kabdon Malamed, that's what that's the nature of the statement. There isn't really intolerant. An intolerant person is not really a basic characteristic. And there's a reason why a person could be, several different reasons why a person could be intolerant. With regard to a Rebbe, I would say there's three possibilities, offhand, maybe more. I mean, it's just that the ones I could think of offhand. Three. One is you see, a Rebbe has to be able to work with a Talmud, and a Talmud must blunder, must make mistakes that are embarrassing mistakes, because the mind doesn't work in a way that it just follows a path of gradations to the top and an even path. It doesn't work that way. A person could develop and be very good in certain areas that he's developed in, and then all of a sudden he can make a basic blunder, a mistake, terrible mistake. Even a great person sometimes can make a mistake like that. But in the process of learning, a truly great person, I mean, usually has removed these type of things from his mind, and he's been able to have his mind function in a certain way that his chance of error are very, very small. But in the process of perfection, there are many blunders. And a person who is a Rebbe must be tolerant of the blunders of the Talmud. Now, why should a Rebbe be intolerant? There are three possibilities. One possibility for a Rebbe being intolerant, I will start from the most base, is, yes?
Maybe, in other words, he sees that he himself has sometimes his blunderous thoughts, and he doesn't like the fact that he has them himself.
Okay.
So when he sees them in other people, it's like really...
That's a possibility. In other words, since there's a certain amount of identification between the Rebbe and the Talmud, and many times the Rebbe doesn't want to recognize in himself the fact that he may not be subject now, but that it wasn't long ago that he himself was subject to this type of a blunder. So therefore, he's intolerant to the idea of the blunders. Actually, when he gets angry at the Talmud, he's angry at himself. He's angry at himself. See? How could you say such a thing? Meaning to say that that's like since he identifies with the Talmud, he's upset about himself. It's an extension of himself. That's one type of intolerance. Of course, there's a more base type of intolerance. A more base type of intolerance would be simply where the Rebbe, many times the Rebbe is afraid himself of uncovering something which is against his own thesis. That's such an intolerance, unfortunately, exists. And that certainly is a...
He's afraid he'll be shown up.
Exactly. He's afraid that he's making a mistake himself. And he's not honest. So, therefore, he can't allow the open questioning, because he's afraid that something will be uncovered which will disclose the fact that he's making a mistake, that he himself has made a blunder. Yeah, that's right. The Rav one time, the Rav mentioned one time in Ashiya that he says how often he was talking about Rashi Yeshivas. It was many years ago. He's talking about Rashi Yeshivas. He says I know how often the Rashi Yeshivas. The Talmud asks a question. He says, and the Rashi even knows that the question is an excellent question, and he just pushes him away and doesn't let him get a foothold because he's afraid that he knows himself he can't handle it. See, that of course is the most base type of intolerance. That's intolerance which stems from the fact that he himself is afraid that he's going to be shown to be wrong. That certainly would be kapden. But then there's a third type of a kapden. Yes? Beis Shammai is kapdonis we one time spoke about. That was a rational kapdonis, Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai simply was their position was everybody can't come on Torah. You have to have a certain respect, and you have to have a certain recognition of your position. And if you don't, we're not interested in teaching you. They felt that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. The Beis Hillel held no. Beis Hillel maintained that you should cater to a person's weakness in evaluating Torah before he really understands what Torah is. But Beis Shammai maintained that before he understands what Torah is, he has to have a certain emotional respect for the system. If he doesn't have that emotional respect, then don't teach him because you're just destroying the system. And we don't need him. That's it. So that was a chance. But Hillel says, no, give him a chance. He doesn't know yet. You'll see. Maybe once he gains more knowledge, he'll have more respect. But that was a machlokes Beis Shammai. So what kind of an approach to take with regard to Talmud Torah? Separate thing. But here we're talking about a kabdin, not in that sense. Beis Shammai was a good Rebbe. So he had many Talmidim, Shammai. So that's not the type of kabdin. But over here we're talking about law. Kabdin malamed means there's another type of kabdonis. That's it, exactly, yeah. There is such a phenomena as a person who is intellectually intolerant. Doesn't necessarily mean that the person has bad characteristics. It could mean that the mind of the person is simply incapable of going into the basic... into the basics anymore. It doesn't have any patience for it. Basics. See, there has to be a Rebbe. When a Rebbe teaches, there has to be an interest in the area that he teaches. If the Rebbe doesn't really like the area he's teaching, then he's not going to be a good Rebbe. That's why I would never dictate to a Rebbe what Masechta he should teach. I would say if the Rebbe does not enjoy the Masechta, then he's not going to be a good Rebbe. That's it. If he doesn't feel comfortable in the Masechta, then he will not, or in the area, he will not be a good Rebbe. A Rebbe, the institution of Rebbe and Talmud really is one of mutual discovery. And they both learn together, really. And if the Rebbe isn't interested in the area, he's not involved in the process of discovery, it's just he's giving over, that's not really a Rebbe. Now, in order to be involved in discovery, you have to have an interest in the area that you're working in. It's impossible to be... The attitude of the mind towards the subject matter has to be one that it's drawn to it. If it's not drawn to it, there's no interest in it, then there is no... Then it's dead. Then it's just like a professor giving a class, just conveying information, and this is... he's not really involved in finding anything out or discovering any ideas, any new ideas, abandoning old ones. Then this is not really a this is not a Rebbe and Talmud relationship. It's not an institution of limud. It's not an institution. Limud is an institution. There's a Rebbe, there's Talmud. They're both involved together from two sides. They're involved in the process of uncovering ideas. And if there's no interest on the part of the Rebbe in the area, then it's not limud. It's not Rebbe and Talmud. The institution is not in existence. Now there are certain people who can't direct their interest to the basic phenomena of learning once they've reached a higher level. Their mind is drawn to the higher area and they simply can't be involved in the lower area. They find it difficult to be involved in the area that they've in the basic areas that they've mastered already. If such people would not be good rabban because they're going to be intolerant. They're going to be intolerant not because of a personal weakness but because of the way their intellectual curiosity is directed.
I mean, the situational thing, yeah.
In other words, since he's intolerant, malamed means a person that's conveying information on an area that he's a master of to someone who does not have the knowledge, you see.
Right.
Now, if he's a person who cannot enjoy rehashing and going over that which he's mastered already, the basic phenomena he's mastered, but his intellect is directed in the... In the higher level, he can't be a teacher. Because he simply, since he's not interested in the basic phenomena that he's mastered, but he's directed towards the higher level, then he can't go over it. He has no interest in it. He's a bad teacher. Einstein was like that. They say he was not a good teacher. Albert Einstein was not a good teacher. Because his mind was always attracted to the upper spheres, the higher areas of knowledge. And teaching was a tremendous burden for him, because he had to go back down over again. He didn't have much patience for it. You see? So it's not necessarily a defect in character that makes a person a poor teacher. It might be simply the way he's made up, that he cannot be involved in going over again areas that he's mastered. Even though a Rebbe and a Talmud undergo a process of discovery, but it's not on an equal level. The Rebbe has more knowledge than the Talmud,
right.
And therefore the Talmud is going to be bothering him about areas which he knows already, which the Rebbe has mastered already. He's going to have to. So therefore, it's not an even path of discovery. An even path of discovery is to chaverim. Then he's a good chaver. A kapdan can be a very good chaver. Malamed, he's not. Why isn't he a good malamed? Because in a malamed, he has to be able to go down to the points that are bothering the Talmud. Those points he can't get involved in, because those points he's mastered already.
But they
and clear them up.
Right?
Take a look at the writings of Euclid. You'll see that Euclid was a remarkable mathematician, geometer. But what was remarkable about his geometry is, I don't know how many discoveries he made himself. I think a couple of them that they attribute to Euclid. Most of them weren't his. Most of the Euclidean propositions were not his. They were there from before. But what did Euclid do? Euclid was a great organizer. See? And he enjoyed laying down the step-by-step buildup of the propositions. If you ever study the first book of Euclid, it's something that's worthwhile to do. Just the first book. I mean, it's nice to go through all the 13 books. But if you just... the first book alone, you can gain tremendously from. Why? Because he has a very orderly presentation of the geometry. And the order is beautiful. The way he sets up each step, one after another, does not skip a step. You see? That is a person that, even though he was a great mind on the top, in the upper region, but he was also able to enjoy setting forth the simplest steps, one by one. As a matter of fact, the Vilna Gaon had his Talmud translate Euclid into Hebrew, into Lashon HaKodesh. Yeah. He had it translated into Hebrew. Because he felt that it's such a beautiful work, and that the Marashah talks, the Marashah and Hurrius, that talks about it, that mentions the benefit of studying geometry. But what is the benefit of Euclidean geometry? The benefit is that a person sees a beautiful arrangement of order, an orderly presentation. In halacha, you also have a beautiful orderly presentation. Not to say that halacha is deficient in that area, but the advantage of geometry is that it's exclusively the order. Halacha is a lot of things, concepts, and in geometry there's no inductive reasoning. It's only deductive reasoning. Halacha is a lot of induction, conceptual thought. Geometry, you don't have too much conceptual thought, except in the beginning, which is really very brief, and if you get into that, you're going into philosophy, not geometry. So anyways, the study of geometry is an isolation of one of the parts of the mind, the arrangement, the ability to arrange things in a logical order. And a person, even though Euclid was a great theoretician, he was able to think of new discoveries in math, but his greatness in writing his propositions was that he was able to enjoy the beauty of the simple steps, of the step-by-step. Now, a Rebbe has to be able to enjoy that process. But not everybody is that way. Not everybody has that ability. Some people, and some very great people, can't be bothered with that. Their intellect is drawn to the higher spheres, to make new discoveries, to uncover new ideas. They don't enjoy going over the same things again. That type of person is not a good Rebbe.
Okay.
Discovery of Rebbe and Talmud means within the institution there's discovery. But not that every step of a Rebbe and Talmud is discovery. If every step was discovery, it wouldn't be a problem of Lord Kazan Malamed.
But there's mutual benefit.
Yes. You see, from what Heshi mentions in the name of the Rav, he said that the Rav said Moshe Rabbeinu was certainly the greater mind, and he wasn't such a good Rebbe as Aaron HaKohen was the Rebbe of Klal, more the Rebbe of Klal Yisrael. If that's true, if what you said is true, makes a lot of sense. So you see that the greater mind is not necessarily the greatest Rebbe. It's a separate thing. The Gemara says V'shaftem u'risem bein, you'll take, the pasuk says, V'shaftem u'risem, you'll take a look, bein oved Hashem la'shel avado. So the pasuk says that you'll take a look and you'll see the difference between a person that's really a servant of God and one that doesn't serve God. So the Gemara says, what does it mean? So the Gemara says, it means there's no comparison between a person who learns his Gemara 100 times or a person who learns the Gemara 101 times. So you see, you can go over the same Gemara 101 times. Yeah, but that doesn't mean, going over the Gemara 101 times doesn't mean he's just repeating over the Gemara. It means his mind is thinking it over, searching for new ideas. That's what it means. It's not the same thing. It's not that you go over it again. And, I mean, a lot of people take it literally. That's very bad. It's not a theoretical understanding of how great minds worked. I mean, it's like there's a Sefer Eidus Nemona that about the Vilna Gaon. Because there's a lot of stories about the Vilna Gaon. So they put out a Sefer. It's called Eidus Nemona. It means the stories about the Vilna Gaon that came down from Gedolim, that you could pretty reliable that's true. So they said the Vilna Gaon used to learn like this. He used to learn, you know, he'd look at a page. And then he just turn it, you know, and look at it, keep on turning, like around like 100 pages an hour or something. It's like an unbelievable amount of, unbelievable. Well, he knew everything by heart already. He knew everything by heart from the time he was a child, and he was a phenomenal memory and genius mind. So he just keep, you know, he turned the page very quickly. So somebody one time stopped him, put his hand on the page, says, "What'd you learn now?" So he said, "I just thought of an answer to a question that they ask on the riff." See? So there's a person that's learning a lot of times, but it's a different kind of learning a lot of times. It's not that he's just mulling over the same thing again and again. Right? There were in Klal Yisrael many years ago people whose sole purpose was to memorize Mishnayos and Brises. Phenomenal memories. They weren't great minds. So their job was to memorize the So those people would say it over and over again to try to remember, you know, just to master the words. But that's something which is like a computer. I mean, it's not really part of the seichel of the higher level of learning of man. So yeah. But at any rate, now that we're on that topic, one time I said, why does it say a person learns 100 times and 101 times? What's the difference? 100 and 101? 100 exactly. 100 means the person who learns because he wants to have the satisfaction that he learned it 100 times. 100's a round number. It's a round number. But 101 means that he's not concerned with how many times he learned it. He just learns it again and again. That's why the pasuk says v'shafta marisem bein oved Hashem la'asher lo avado. Why is that? Everybody's like, what do you mean? Ain't it 100 to 101? What's the difference in one time? No, because the thing is, lo avado means that's not really avado, because he's doing it because of the satisfaction of they learned 100 times. That's lo avado. The 101, that means he's doing it because he really enjoys the area. That's oved Hashem. Okay. At any rate, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that a Rebbe would do it. Even the one that enjoys going over it, I wouldn't say that he'd do it. He's just drawn to going over it.
Yeah, but it's an enjoyable thing.
Since he knows he has an obligation and since to atonement, so he does it. But the question is, once he's involved in it, where is his energy at there? That's the question. Does he enjoy it or not? If he can't take it, he's not a good Rebbe. That's it. See, Rabban Cutler was like that. Rabban Cutler was a great Goyen. Great Goyen, Rabban Cutler. But he was a terrible Rebbe. Terrible Rebbe. Because he couldn't go over. As a matter of fact, he didn't even understand why what a person doesn't understand. He didn't understand why a person doesn't understand something. So somebody asked him, "Kashi," he said it over the exact same way another two times. And that's it. That's really Kabdin. So Kabdin really is intolerance. But intolerance, what the cause of intolerance could be, three possibilities. Now let's go to the next one. Next one is velo. Now he has to be careful simply in grammatics, because there's room over here to make a mistake. It says velo kol hamarbe b'schara machken, which if you translate it literally means not everybody that does a lot of business gets wiser, which would imply that some people who do spend a lot of time in business, or most of the time in business, do get wiser. No, that's wrong. It's not right. what it means, you have to reverse the word simply, because otherwise it's misleading. It means, it should be like this: Kol hamarbe bischora lo machin. That's what it is. You have to switch around a little bit. It means anyone. It doesn't mean most people, not everybody. It means anyone that spends most of his time in business does not become wiser. Okay. Now, what does it mean? That's the literal translation of it. But what is it conceptually? What does it mean? Okay. There's two pshatim on this statement, two interpretations. One is the Rambam's and Rashi's. They're both the same. And then Rashi gives another pshat, which is very unusual. But we'll take the first pshat. The Rambam is like this. He says, "Va'omru shehatora lo timotzei." V'amru shatara lo timotze bebalei ha-gaiva v'agasas v'lo b'holchei arotzos rechokos. Torah is not to be found among the haughty, nor is it to be found among the ones that travel to distant countries. V'samchu zeh l'posik al tzad ha-melitza. And Chazal tied this up to a posik. Tzad ha-melitza means like a mushel. Derech Mashal. What the Rambam is saying is that they don't really think that's the pasuk, but it ties in. A lot of times, because I would tie something to the pasuk because it's similar. So the pasuk is like this: Lo b'shamayim hi, lo b'shamayim hi. That the Torah is not in the heavens. Leimor miyala lan hashamayim. So who will go up to the heavens and take it down for us? And then it says, V'lo me'ever layam hi. And the Torah is not found on the other side of the ocean. Same pasuk. Pasuk says, so people say, who will go to the other side of the ocean and bring it back? So, Amru, so Chazal said, Lo begase haruachi. Now when it says, Lo bashamayim, it's not in the heavens. Heavens mean, it reflects a high point. So, it's not bashamayim, means it's not in those who are haughty, and not to be found in those who are haughty, and it's not to be found on those who go to the other side of the sea, which means the ones who are involved in business. In business all the time. Okay. Yeah. What does it mean? And what is the connection? Apparently there's a connection. It's not just, the Rambam says, not just a matter of business, but it's also the haughty. So there must be a concept that exists between the two. Alright? So what is the unifying concept? There must be a common denominator between these two things, otherwise what's the pasuk talking about? So why is it that Torah is not found in these two people? Yes. What it means is like this. You see, what it means is like this. It means... What? What it means is... It means like this. Let me just elaborate a little bit, okay? It's basically, it's a question of... You're right. See, in order for a person to be in a state of knowledge, when we speak over here of a person who has Torah, what we mean is a person whose very nature is attached to Torah. It means this person has achieved Torah. We're not talking about a person that has certain knowledge, certain facts. You can find people who are haughty who do have a certain knowledge of Torah. What we're talking about is where the personality really is one of Torah. The personality is one of Torah. It's a different... It means that Torah is a part of the perfection of the personality. All right? Because you can't say the person that's haughty doesn't have any knowledge. The person is a tremendous genius and he's haughty. You're going to tell me that he doesn't know anything? Not true. He can, of course, he's going to be tremendously limited, as we will see, and what he could have, the knowledge that he could have gained. But what we're talking about in Pirkei Avos is perfection. When we say Torah, we mean that Torah is a part of his nature. And Torah and his nature merge into a type of perfection, a certain type of level. Now what it means is like this, that in order to attain, because really Pirkei Avos is only interested in one thing, perfection of man. Insofar as the Torah is concerned, there are two possible attitudes of the psyche. There's one attitude of the psyche, of the energy of the individual. See, the energy of an individual, as you know, is not something which is very small, but it's great.
and it searches for satisfaction. There's one type of situation where the person has found the satisfaction. The satisfaction is in himself. In himself. He's very satisfied with himself. He enjoys walking around feeling happy about himself. He thinks he's convinced that he's a great person. And that's it. There, his main energy is right there, involved in the self. That is that's Bashamayim. That's the person that's Bashamayim. Okay? The second type of person is the person who is not a haughty person. Not necessarily a haughty person. But he's a person whose energy is in search of something. It's in search of something. He's looking for something. But where is he looking? He's always looking over there. Me'eva Leyam, far away. When I have that, then I will be happy. You see? That's the Me'eva Leyam. The next conquest. Yeah, the description is perfect one. Me'eva Leyam. He's always Me'eva Leyam. Where is his happiness? It's always right over there. The next conquest, that's going to be the happiness. See? That's the person that's Me'eva Leyam. So really, there are two possibilities for a person's energy. Either the person has found it already in himself, he has found it already, or else he is about to find it in the next conquest. That's it. That's Me'eva Leyam. One more step. If I go over there, make that deal, I have it. Okay? Those are the two phenomena, of human nature. In either one, there is no Torah. There's no Torah. Very simple. In one, there is no Torah because the energy is satisfied. So there's no need. In the other one, there is no Torah because the energy is waiting for the next conquest. So who is the individual that does have Torah? That's what we have to ask. So who is the individual that does have it? What kind of a nature does he have? Good question. We eliminated the natures that he doesn't have, but what kind of a nature does he have? Yeah. The answer is, if he's not searching, what is he doing with his energy? I mean, he just has no energy. I mean, he's not going to really gain any Torah. He is searching, but in the search, he recognizes one thing: that it's here and now. It's here and now. He recognizes that the source of his unhappiness or his search to improve himself is because there's something right here and now that he's missing. That's what he needs. It's here and now. He recognizes he's missing something. He doesn't have the satisfaction of the haughty individual, and he doesn't have the opinion that he's going to attain his satisfaction over there in the next conquest. But where does he realizes this is the state he's in. He realizes that he is looking for something. He realizes it's not over there, and he knows it's right. Korov elacha. That's the pasuk. Kikorov lo basha. Actually, that's what the pasuk means. Lo basha mayimi lemar miyala lano shemaima. Whole description over there in the pasuk, which means that it's all the reason why the Rambam says derech malitza, because lo basha mayim is referring to baligayva. Lo basha mayim is part of the whole description. Part of the description, the Torah is talking about the idea that people always feel the satisfaction is going to come from the next situation, the next conquest. That's going to be the satisfaction. So it says, no, kikar v'lecha dov ma'od, b'ficho v'vavcha l'asasa. It's very close. B'ficho v'vavcha, it's in you, it's in your nature. And once a person recognizes that, then he is open to Torah. That is the state of mind that a person requires to be open to knowledge. That's what that's the way the Rambam learns, and that's the first pshat in Rashi. And once he achieves Torah, once he reaches the level where he does have Torah, and he experiences the enjoyment of Torah, what happens then? Then the energy is consumed in the here and now. The person of Torah is a person of the here and now. That's what he is. The man of Torah is a man of the immediate present. Actually, you know, the philosophers say, the philosophers have said that in life is very strange. Why? Because the future is not here, and the past is gone. So your whole life is a split second. The present is a split second. So what kind of a life is it? The man of Torah is a man of the now. He's the man of the now. He's not the man of the future. He's not the man of the. He's not a man of the past. He's a man of the here and now. Okay. But the only thing is the Bhargava also is in the here and now. But there's one difference. The Bhargava is not involved in a process. The Bhargava is not involved in the process of discovery. Bhargava is involved in the in a past acquisition. That's it. He's satisfied with his past acquisition. Yeah. Okay. At any rate, that's the... But I want to mention one thing, though. I want to mention one thing. In learning Pirkei Avos, I mentioned this before, but you should always keep it in mind, that when they depict different personalities, you have to remember, you shouldn't think in terms of fixed. You shouldn't think in terms of a fixed type of person. You have to recognize that we all partake of all the types. See, the reason why they isolate these characteristics, these characters and the individuals, is because then you can see it best. But a normal person has a part of him that's Me'ever Layom, has a part of him that's Bashamayim, you see? And perfection requires a person unraveling these parts of his nature and being able to improve himself. So you shouldn't think in terms of a fixed type. That this is the type. Oh, one type is he's the Me'ever Layom type. And this is the other. Everybody partakes, since we're all human beings, we have the same nature, we partake of everything, of all these different natures to various degrees. Okay? So therefore, what a person has to do is he has to recognize his own imperfections and work on those. It just shows you a prototype in order that you should recognize and isolate the type of phenomena that we're dealing with. But not that you should label individuals and label yourself. I mean, then you're not involved in the process of perfection. Everybody basically has the same... is made up of the same... contains the same prototypes in himself. Has to recognize them and work with them. Okay. Second shot. He says, Nusach Acher, Ha'odam Ha'rotze L'Shakem, he says. The person that wants to become wise, Sorach She'yasok B'chol Inyonim Shel Yishuv Ha'olam. If he wants to become wise, he must involve himself in all areas of societal improvement. Bein b'schora, whether it's business, bein b'shar chachmas, whether it's other chachmas. Lios meivin b'kol, bein b'shar chachmas darkei olam, bein b'shar chachmas darkei olam, other... Or whether you're talking about all the chachmas about the world, Leos Maven Bekal, an amazing Rashi, that a person should be a maven in every area. In other words, a Rashi saying is that a Renaissance man. That's right. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting Rashi. Right. The Maimer has a finter Maimer. V'lo kol amaver b'schar machim has a finter Maimer. That's another problem. But let's understand what he's saying, first of all. What is he saying? Math and science make sense, because that's intellectual perfection. But business, that's why the Ram didn't write this. Well, Mr. Marshak's saying is very good. I don't think it means business, meaning that you should be able to be successful at pulling off a shrewd deal. I don't think it means that. What it means is that you should understand. You should be able to understand, as Mr. Marshak says, understand the psychology of the business phenomena. What's going on? How it works? How people work? How people function in different areas? Why Leos Maven Bakal? Why is that so? Exactly. What it means is. What he's talking about over here, machkim doesn't mean intellectual abstraction, abstract intellectual thought, because that obviously you're not gonna gain that from business or even understanding people. You're not gonna gain that. If you want abstract thought, you study the sciences. But what it's talking about is a certain type of perfection. And what it means, what Rashi is presenting here is that in order for a person to achieve a certain perfection, he has to understand the panorama of all human activities, because all human activities really stem from the soul of man. And in order to understand man, you have to be able to see him in all his activities, in all his endeavors. If a person doesn't study the phenomena, then he can't really have an understanding of man. So that the person that really understands psychology and has knowledge of man is the person that can understand man in all the expressions of his personality. Which means he cannot really leave one area untouched. So that the person must really study every area. Just like it would be absurd for a person to study a sugya and look at half of the facts. I mean, his chances of arriving at a true conclusion are very, very small. Similarly, with regard to human life. In order to understand human life, you have to be able to see all its expressions. And therefore, that's what Rashi is Leos Maven Bakol, Rashi says. Why is Rashi is Leos Maven Bakol? Because Rashi wants to make clear that he's not saying that he should be a successful businessman in terms of earning a lot of money. Of course, that's not the objective of this member. The objective of the member is to be Maven Bakol, to understand everything, to understand all the phenomena. That's what he means. He means to, and through that type of knowledge, a person can perfect himself. Because Yadis maintains that perfection can only take place through knowledge. Since it has to be through knowledge, so you have to be able to see and understand phenomena. But I would say like this, I would add one more thing. It's not simply, you see, if that were the case, if we stop at this point, so you'd say, well, I can read it in the book. Why? Just read the facts and I'll understand it. Now, the answer is like this. The answer is that in order for a person to perfect himself, it's not enough that the subject should be a cold, abstract subject. That's fine for intellectual perfection. But in order to perfect yourself, he has to deal with his nature and his emotions. And dealing with the emotions, he has to be able to relate to them in a way where he's directly in line with the reality of the phenomena. A book is not the way. A book is not the way that a person can do it. You know, when Sigmund Freud wrote Albert Einstein about his discovery, so Albert Einstein went to observe certain neurotics to see how it works. He wasn't satisfied to read the book because a book. Is does not convey, even in terms of knowledge, a book doesn't convey the knowledge that reality does. A person that is the real student is a student of reality. He has to be a student of reality. And to be a student of reality, you have to see the phenomenon in front of you in reality. Not enough to just read about it. A person got angry. That's not or he said something, did this and did that. You have to be able to observe the phenomena. That's why Chazal were big on that. Chazal maintained you have to be able to observe, to see the phenomena, to see the people interacting, to understand. To understand something, you have to have an observation in front of you. That's the way a person's nature is. And if you don't have it, you could understand insofar as the abstract thought is concerned, yeah. But you're not going to master it as a part of yourself. In order to be a part of yourself, you have to be able to see the phenomena and understand the phenomena. That's what Rashi means. That the person, the real chacham, a person that wants to be a real chacham and perfect himself, perfection of the soul, he has to expose himself, he has to be able to see the entire panorama of human life, the expressions of human life. So if he doesn't have the opportunity to see it, he's not a chacham. It's myopic. I mean, there's one dimension that's missing. You have to have the dimension of reality in order to be able to really feel and to sense and to achieve a knowledge of the situation. What? Like Kohelis, like Kohelis. That's right, like Kohelis. Exactly, like Kohelis. That's right. Exactly. That's like Kohelis. That's why the Medrash says by Shlomo HaMelech that he went into all these different things. Of course, they say you shouldn't do it because a person will just waste his life. Love will get caught. Besides, love will get caught and somebody at
a certain level,
they'll do it. But that was different. But at any rate, yeah. Why he actually went through all the experiences, Shlomo HaMelech? The reason why he went through the experiences was because a philosopher could tell you what the right way to live is, but he can't tell you why you live the wrong way. See? That's the trouble. He can tell you what the right way to live is, but why do you live the wrong way? Can't explain it to you. He'll just say it's foolish. It's not rational. Fine. That's not going to help you too much. It might help a person who has free choice in the area. It'll help. But a person who's really tied to the emotions is not going to help them. So what Shlomo HaMelech did was he studied the emotions, and he saw why a person is drawn to certain things. He was a student of his own emotions. Why does the Medrash say that only Shlomo HaMelech can do it, and nobody else should do it except him? The answer is because he was on the level where he could be an objective observer of his own psyche. Nobody else could do it. Because other people aren't on the level where they could be objective. So therefore he's going to get drawn in by his emotions, he'll be fooled. But Shlomo HaMelech was able to live two personalities. He was able to experience the emotions, then he could withdraw and study. Now what happened to me? How did these emotions work? That was his uniqueness. That's why the Medrash says that Shlomo HaMelech did it already, and nobody else should do it. Of course, everybody always says, "Sure, that's why he decided he did it." Yeah, but give me a chance. The reason why they say that is precisely because you see already that there's no objectivity with regard to it. This is not talking about an objective quest. They'd love to get stuck in one of these experiments. Stay there. Yeah. Not the results, they're the experiments. They're very attracted to. Yeah, that's right. So yeah. But the truth of the matter is that with regard to what we're saying, that the real knowledge can only be when you're in contact with the phenomena. As a person's constructed in a certain way, he has sense organs, and when he senses, he's constructed in a way that if he uses his senses to the best of their ability, he's in a better position to make judgments, intellectual judgments. So if you, insofar as he has the exposure to the phenomena, so his senses are working 100%, and now he's in the best possible position to understand the phenomenon. Otherwise, he's not really about the phenomenon. Otherwise, he's just reading. It's secondhand evidence. It's not the same thing. Not the same thing. That's what Rashi says. An interesting Rashi. It says he experienced all the titles. He built up the most beautiful palaces that anyone can imagine, all the different things that he had over there. There's a Sukkim tell you what he did. All the agents. But he did it because the Pasuk says before. He says, Ad Asher Era, Ezet Tov Vnei Adam Asher Yamlo Mispa Yimei Chayim. So he could study, he can observe his own emotions and how his emotions react to the situation, what benefit there is. He wasn't, Shlomo HaMelech was not an ascetic person. He was ascetic, he couldn't do those things. So he wasn't negative about it, and he wasn't positive about it. He was an objective observer. He wanted to really see how the emotions work and study them when they're in operation. That's what he did. Expression. In other words, what I'm saying is that you have to observe. The reason why we say business is because the areas, you see, when you say business is tremendous. You'll say, well, you have to observe every single phenomena. I mean, that's a good question. Every phenomena, a person has to observe every nonsensical phenomena. No, that's not a chacham. Yeah. But a chacham observes the main directions of the energy, of the main trends, yeah. Any area where there's a tremendous amount of energy must be an important area for man. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. Now, business is a tremendously powerful area, one of the biggest areas that man puts his energies into. There must be something there. Can't just be an accidental thing. So therefore, I would say that's an area that should be investigated. That should be observed. It should be investigated. It should be understood. An area should be chosen by virtue of their significance. And what is significant? That which you see is constantly being manifest and where man is directing a lot of energy into. That's an important situation. That's the way Rashi... that's a Rashi. That we only all of us are the same. We only differ in one respect. We only differ. I'll tell you how we differ. We differ insofar as we partake of perfection. That's the only way we differ. In regard to everything else, we're all the same. The difference is only apparent. It's not a real difference. Yeah. So now what it means like this, according to Rashi, take a look at what Rashi says. Ha'odam ha'ratza l'tzchakeim tzorach sh'yasak b'chol inyonim shel yishuv olam. Bein b'schora, bein b'shor chachmos darkei olam. Lios mevin b'kol. See, Rashi held an interesting thing. Rashi held, it doesn't just mean that he should be an observer in business. It means he should be involved in the business. He should be involved in business. Because that's the best way for the person to make his observations. However, what he says is like this. That business is only one. Business is only one of the aspects of Yishuv HaOlam, of establishing society.